Call meeting to order. Quorum is present. Rip Ted Kanicki, can you review the March 5th minutes, and if you accept them, can you, if you approve of them, can you move them out and adopt them? Next, move the minutes of March 5th.
March the 5th moves the minutes of the March 5th meeting of Zeb Knuth. Any discussion on the motion? Okay, all in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are adopted. All right, the next item business, Representative Primba, State Road 27.
I know, or
is that 26, Representative O'Trimba? I just know it, I travel it. 11 Mile Bar, what is the name of the place?
Mr. Chair, it's Long Prairie, Minnesota, and it's 135 miles from here.
But the name of the bar?
The name of the bar?
Yeah.
12 Mile Tavern.
12 Mile Tavern. I knew the place.
It's my sister's bar, and it's halfway between Long Prairie and Little Falls.
There you go. Representative Cornish?
Oh, just a procedural question, Mr. Chair. Today on our bills, what will be the process? Are we including these in or held over or separate, or how does that go?
Well, we're going to lay these over. And then I'm going to have an amendment to the Game and Fish Bill, and we'll tell you what bills that we've heard over the process of the period of this session that are included in the amendment. So we'll have the bill plus the amendment, and then we'll vote to put these different bills into the, incorporate these bills that we're hearing today into the main bill.
Thank you.
Okay, clarify it for you, Mr. Helm, that sound appropriate?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll move the House File 1211 for Representative O'Trimba to your bill. Thank you. Welcome for coming, and I see you have some testifiers, so go ahead.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I have some, I learned about this issue, I think, probably several days after session ended, and they were pretty ticked that I had voted against this smokeless powder not being used anymore with muzzle loading. So I did a little homework and figured out a little bit about what had happened and how it happened, and so I drafted a bill. And I have several muzzle loaders from my district who want to convince you that we need to have that again.
Okay, welcome. If you give us your name and I suppose who you represent, or your association or yourself, go ahead with your testimony. Welcome very much to the committee.
My name is Russell Van Valkenburg. I used to do quite a bit of muzzleloader hunting, but with my age and other health issues, I don't do as much of it, but I wrote out what my feelings were regarding this subject, because I usually forget half of what I meant to say if I don't have it in front of me. So if with your permission, I'll read what I put down on this sheet of paper.
Well, half is pretty impressive. I usually don't get that much, so go ahead.
Well, I can get a little rambling occasionally, but I'll try and keep it brief. Many years ago, when I was a lot younger, I went muzzleloader hunting with some young fellows who convinced me that muzzleloader hunting was much more fun and challenging than was heavy rifle hunting. I hunted with them for several years. Age and other health issues prevent me from doing much of it anymore. However, I still have my old muzzleloader rifle and hope to do it again someday. My son still muzzleloader hunts, and he was discussing this ban on smokeless powder and how it was accomplished. Since I have been confined to my house more lately, I've been watching government at work on the television, Congress, the state legislature, and to some extent the county and the school hearings. I also have been participating a bit in the local politics out where I live.
Needs one of these.
I have been hearing the term good government and bad government. As what was explained to me, an amendment was added to Representative Primba's Game Fish Bill at the last minute of the committee hearings last year at the Minnesota Statutes 2006. Doing it this way gives the committee no time to discuss the pros and cons of the amendment and how it may or may not affect interested parties. While it is not my intention to tell you how to conduct your hearings, adding an amendment to a good bill in this manner is, to me, a good example of bad government. It appears to me that when you give something you have to someone else, you have to take it from somebody to give it. I wonder if far less was given to some than was taken from someone else in adding this amendment to what was otherwise a good bill. Proposing the amendment at the time when the committee members have time to read and amend it, discuss it with their staff and constituents, and so forth, gives it a far better chance of being an example of good government. I have read the testimony of Mark Anderson, and considering what was taken away from many of the hunters, I wonder who the receivers were and whether it was in any way a fair trade-off. I thank the committee for taking my testimony, and if you got any questions for me, let's fly.
Thank you very much. Any questions from the committee? Do you have another testifier, Representative Otermba?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, we do.
No. Welcome, and if you state your name, and then go ahead with your testimony.
My name is Noel Van Valkenburg, and I have comments. I've been hunting the season since it began in 1977. I believe it was well over 25 years ago. I started out with black powder because it was well available. At this point, in the last 10 years, they've come up with a lot of new modern black powder substitutes, which are fine, except they're much more expensive. They do the same thing as a smokeless powder, and I just don't see that we need to take that extra cost. And then the other thing is the smell that comes off. It's the same as rotten eggs or whatever off the black powder. I don't see that that needs to be a part of the black powder hunting season, since the definition is black powder hunting is not black powder. It's muzzleloader hunting, and you load the rifle from the muzzle. That's what defines the special muzzleloader season. And one of the other things would be the cost and the smell.
Hey, any questions for the testifier, Representative Cornish?
Mr. Chairman, members, I look at these bills here, and I just sometimes just want to throw your hands up. And the first question I want to ask is not to be a smart aleck. I mean, why don't you just hunt with a rifle? I mean, it's the furthest thing from black powder hunting what you're talking about. Is the question I have for you is how do you justify using smokeless powder? It always was a black powder season, or muzzleloader. They didn't have smokeless powder when this first started. The only reason they've got smokeless powder now, or to allow you to use them, is because the generation after generation, we've got so sophisticated that now you have a huge bolt-action rifle. They call a muzzleloader. The only thing that resembles a muzzleloader is that it's loaded from the end. He uses this new high-explosive, propellant or fast-burning propellant that you come in a regular rifle. Now we shoot copper-jacketed bullets out of rifle barrels that can probably keep an inch grouping at 100, 200 yards, or 150 anyway. It's just frustrating, I guess, to talk about it when the rotten egg smell, that's what you had in the Pioneer Indian days all the way up until just a few years ago when you started to use smokeless powder. So what's the problem in just getting a rifle and hunting regular rifle? Why do you want to modernize a black powder muzzleloader season to where it isn't even primitive anymore?
Has this been directed to me?
Yeah.
One of the reasons is the cost is a big deal, and another reason is the availability of black powder is about, I got to drive 100 miles to get black powder for the most part, unless I order it in advance. And I guess the other reason is, these black powder substitutes are not nearly as primitive as smokeless powder. Smokeless powder has been around for 100 years. All these black powder substitutes have come about in the last 10 years.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gornish.
Well, actually, yeah, before we had the smokeless powder substitutes, yeah, it was black powder before that. And it's just, like I say, I don't know where it's going with the hunting, but it just the black powder enthusiasts come out with this season, or we wouldn't even have had it. And a bunch of people come up with this idea years ago. I mean, I shot my first bear here with the black powder 30 years ago, but now it's just gotten so sophisticated. I guess I don't really have a dog in the fight, and if they want to make them into rifles and call it black powder, I guess that's up to them. It's not unsafe, I guess, but just okay. Frustrated.
Thank you, Representative Cornish. Is there anyone in the audience like testify for or against the bill, or someone from the department, anyone else? Doesn't appear that there is. Any other, Representative Hoppe?
Mr. Chair, briefly, we put this into law last year, and contrary to an earlier testifier, we didn't do it at the 11th hour or, you know, at the very end or tag it onto a bill. We had a lot of discussion about this, and the reason that we wanted to do it is because when muzzleloader hunting started, the proponents of that wanted a special season because it is more fun and more challenging. And what we've got now with the inline muzzleloaders, and like Representative Cornish said, with the bolt action, you know, it's not really as challenging. It's not really as primitive. There's not a lot of difference other than the single shot than there is between a regular rifle. And I think if we're going to have a muzzleloader season, we should make it. You know, we're making it now where we're going to have a proposal again for scopes, and, you know, there's just not that much difference between a regular rifle and a muzzleloader, and if we're going to do that, then let's not even have a special muzzleloader season.
Anything else from the committee? Okay, I'm going to renew my motion to lay this over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Game and Fish Bill. Thank you very much, Representative Otremba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. We'll have different discussions later behind the scenes.
The next,
Mr. Chair, I mean, Representative Otremba, what are you saying by that?
Well, you know,
are you saying that we do things behind the scenes, that we don't have an open process? Yes. I'm a little offended by that comment.
Well,
Otremba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It wasn't anything naughty. I just was going to remind when people drive 135 miles away, I try to respect everybody that comes here, and so I would appreciate that for my constituents also. That's what I was going to say.
And Representative Otremba, I'm not trying to read things into this, but am I disrespecting somebody that came?
No.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much. Next bill to be before us is House File 1241, and I know that many of us are familiar with that number this year, House File 1241. And Representative Tao, I will move bill House File 1241, and Representative Tao, I understand that you have an amendment to get the bill in the shape that you'd like to have it before the committee.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Do we have a copy of that amendment? I don't think that I have it here before me now. We're passing it out. Could you just wait a second?
Sure.
Representative Tao.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Hoppe.
While we're getting the amendment passed out, I would like to commend Representative Tao for working with others and trying to find peace in the valley and bringing forward this amendment.
Thank you. Did you want to move the amendment?
I will move the amendment for you, Representative Tao.
You're right. We're glad, amendment.
Okay, we're just about to have the amendment out to the members. Representative Hoppe moves the 1241A1 amendment. Representative Tao. Well, let's see, we need to adopt that amendment. So all in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, to the bill 1241 as amended, Representative Tao.
Thank you, members and Mr. Chair. Essentially, the bill allows, currently right now, you can use a crossbow to hunt during the archery season if you get a waiver from the DNR. There's two ways to get that waiver. Either you're disabled or you're elderly. And so with this amendment on, it would allow crossbow use for taking a deer during the gun season. And so we have moved a lot from during the archery season to just the gun season. And just for the record, I am a metro guy, but I hunt both with compound bows, rifle, and shotgun. And if this new bill before us pass, I'll probably pick up muzzleloader as well. But with me, I have Dan. He's the president of the Crossbow Association, and he'll explain, talk a little bit about what he is prepared. So,
welcome to the committee, sir. State your name and who you represent. Go ahead with your testimony.
My name is Daniel Hendricks, and as Representative Tao said, I am the president of the American Crossbow Federation. I'm also a member of the Minnesota Association of Crossbow Hunters. I've been a bow hunter since 1973. This past fall was my 46th year of big game hunting. In 1994, up until that point, I was anti-crossbow myself, and then we started an organization called the United Foundation for Disabled Archers, which we have two hunts, one in Minnesota and one in Wisconsin, and we take disabled people on bow hunts up in Park Rapids. And it was during that that I and about 30, 40 other bow hunters who were doing the hunt discovered through actually helping these guys sight in their bows and shoot them that they were no different than a compound bow, other than the fact that they held the string back. But a lot of the things that they said about the crossbow for years we discovered were not true. And consequently, there's a lot of people in Minnesota that would like to have the choice of using a crossbow as another weapon. In Minnesota, you can take your deer with a pistol, a rifle, a shotgun, black powder, a recurve bow, a long bow, a compound bow. Why not a crossbow?
All right, questions for the testifier? Representative Cornish.
I'll have to be a lot nicer than I was the last guy, I guess. For some reason, you felt insulted.
Oh, let's not.
Don't apologize, Tony. Maybe you want to come down here and meet you. First of all, a question that Representative Dill asked of the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association earlier today, I think, would be appropriate here. How many registered paid members do you have to the Crossbow Association in Minnesota? None, just Minnesota only.
257.
So when we are considering changing this, it would be for the concerns of 257 people versus 450,000 deer licenses sold, I guess is what I was getting at.
May I ask, Tony, how many members are paid members in the Minnesota Bow Hunters Incorporated?
Bow Hunters Incorporated? You'd have to ask those guys. I'm not a member.
Well, we'll have them come up and answer that question. Representative Cornish.
The only question I have is, I guess I have a hard time with your comparison of that to archery. In crossbow, it isn't even called an arrow, it's called a bolt. And with a crossbow, when the deer comes by your stand, you don't have to make any movement back and pull the bow, and that's one of the toughest things you get by in archery hunting. And so I'm wondering, with something that doesn't even contain an arrow, and they call it a bolt, and a totally different type of sighting system, I just wonder where the comparison to archery is.
Mr. Chair, members, we are not hunting. This bill will not hunt during the archery season. We are competing against the rifles and shotguns. And if we allow people to take a deer with a rifle, which you could shoot if you're really good, maybe 300 yards. Really good, maybe 500 yards. Maybe with a crossbow, 75. So we're competing against rifles and shotguns at the same time. So I don't see anything wrong with that.
May I respond to that that question, please?
To the testifier.
Okay, the crossbow is very heavy. Okay, when you go up to the tree, you don't put it up your shoulder and wait for a deer to come by. When the deer comes, you lift it to your shoulder to shoot. With the bow, you have to raise your bow. But any deer hunter who has enough experience knows that you don't do either when the deer is looking at you. You wait until its head is behind the tree or behind the rock where it's looking away from you. Regardless, whichever one you do, you have to lift that bow to your shoulder, which equates into the same amount of motion as drawing your bow back.
Representative Cornish.
I don't want to chew the fat. We could go back and forth, tit for tat, for an hour, and I could see the look in your eyes that you agree. I guess I'll let the other testifiers speak, but I've been, shooting a bull for the deer and bear for something like since the 70s, and I guess we just have a philosophical difference. One thing that I really worry about is that in other states, sir, that where we've done this, it starts out with the disabled, then it goes to gun season, and then it eventually ends up in regular season. Right now, in archery hunting, you can still go out and get a fairly peaceful hunt, and you don't have to wear a fluorescent orange. What we've seen happen to the muzzleloader season, it got so popular naturally, now they're dressed in orange. And I got the same feeling about the more archery hunters we pour into the woods. And so I admit that I haven't got a good, sound, ethical, or a biological reason not to allow this. But I just see it as, like I said in the other thing, scopes on muzzleloaders, the fancy powders, the copper jacketed bullets. You're just getting away from the whole meaning. And pretty soon, it's going to be where there's going to be so many hunters in archery season. They're going to start to, right now we got like a 2-month hunt. You're going to see the season get shorter probably once the deer population comes down, dressed in orange. And that's just some of my fears. I don't think cross guns are as long as we're not going to put them in archery season, I'd like to see it put to cross guns instead of cross bows. But that's just some of my worries. I don't think you're a big bad person fronting with a crossbow. I just hate to see the sport be changed completely from its original intent. So, kind of like muzzleloader.
Thank you for your testimony. I want to get on to Mr. Kelleher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I won't take up a lot of the committee's time. My name is Tom Kelleher. I'm here representing the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association. We unfortunately did not have this opportunity to discuss this bill at our corporate board meeting. However, my executive director, Mark Johnson, has told me that at a couple of the regional meetings this came up, and the consensus among our members was this is just another methodology for harvesting deer. And I know that Representative Powell is talking about doing this in the firearm season. I certainly agree with the logic that if it's a crossbow during the firearm season, I don't know what the concerns really are, although I understand where Representative Cornish is coming from. And
you guys might have been too busy talking about that venison bill on that buck.
No comment, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you very much. From the department. From the department, and then as soon as we get done with the department, we need to have a technical amendment that we need to take a look at to Mr. Hellenthal. Mr. Meyer, welcome.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you very much. For the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. The bill before you today, I think the committee's had a good discussion on it. It is a social issue, one of technology coming back into the season again. Just on the dates, allowing it during the rifle season, on the amendment lines, 1.28 takes it through the end of the archery season, December 31st. I believe the muzzleloader season ends December 10th, or right around there, so this would be competing with the end of the bull hunting season. If the author's intent is to limit it during the rifle and muzzleloader season, that's one technical correction. Crossbows are used in other states. It is an issue, one that we need to deal with, or you folks need to deal with. Some of the concerns we have are the ability of these things to be a sniper's tool, but, you know, poaching is poaching, no matter what, if you outlaw them or you allow them. They are very silent. They will allow people to perhaps take deer out of their back door, out of their truck window, wherever they have the opportunity to. You can't, you could shoot a gun out of your patio door, but your wife might get a little upset or be a little loud, might make a mess. With this, you could slide open a patio door, a window in your house, and easily dispatch an animal for many, many, many yards. We have some concerns about those types of activities, but again, the social issues are one that you folks have the decision tools, or you guys are here to make those decisions. We, have concerns about the issue, but again, it's up to you folks to decide.
Well, Mr. Meyer, right now, it's not illegal to possess a crossbow, as I understand. So someone could have a crossbow and poach a deer now, whether we have it during the season or not.
Mr. Chair, you're absolutely correct. That's why that's not a good excuse. It's just an example I bring up.
Okay.
That is out there.
Well, Mr. Meyer, Representative Powell, if you could come up to the microphone. We do have the issue that Mr. Meyer brought up before us regarding the bill as amended. Mr. Helen, can you address that issue?
Mr. Chair, I put together the amendment right before the meeting, and I missed something because the amendment adds 97B035 subdivision 2, and that was in the repealer. So in the repealer in the bill, we need to strike out 97B035 subdivision 2 because it would be part of the amended bill.
Okay, and then Mr. Meyer, could you again repeat what you said about the date, the December 31 date?
Mr. Chair, members, I believe that is the closing of the archery season. Muzzleloader season typically closes the first weekend or so in December. It's open 2 weeks, I believe, from Thanksgiving through, I think this year it was December 10th. So this would have 3 weeks or 21 days into the archery season in the end of the season.
Representative Tal, what is your wish on that, on what Mr. Meyer has brought before us?
Mr. Chair, members, it was my intention to move all the way to the December 31st. I figure.
So to include the crossbows during the final days of the archery season?
That's right.
Okay. On the amendment that Council Helen has suggested, I'll move that amendment to the bill as amended. Any further discussion on the amendment? Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, what did your amendment do then?
Mr. Helen, can you describe that, please?
Representative Cornish, it just takes out the repealer in the original bill that said 97B035 subdivision 2 because section 2 of the amendment pertains to that.
Representative Cornish.
You know, Representative Tao, if the bill progresses and it is included between now and then, would you, if your intention is to move it into the firearm season, couldn't you just restrict it? The muzzleloader season always starts the Saturday after Thanksgiving and runs for 16 days. And could you just restrict it to that instead of leaving the archery season since your intention was to soften it up and put it with firearms?
Mr. Chair and members, I figure there's 3 weeks left. There's a lot of snow. It's cold. Not a lot of people out there. I figure give these guys 3 weeks to all the way to the end of the archery season. But we could continue to talk.
Mr. Meyer, I want to make sure I understand this because, as you know, I haven't deer hunted in a few years. So the muzzleloader season ends and then there's an archery season for a period of time after that, about 2 weeks. And so what he is proposing in this bill would allow that the crossbow is used all the way through the gun season, all the way through black powder, and, as this bill states, be used on those final days of the archery season as well, but not in the archery season at the beginning of the
right.
hunting.
You got it.
Is that right, Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chair, yes, sir.
All right. Any other questions? Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to make I was understanding that we were trying to allow the crossbows in the gun season, which I think is a separate argument. This actually, now you still want to use them in the bow season. So again, Assistant Commissioner Meyer, I'm going to put you on the spot. You guys got a position on this bill?
Mr. Chair, members, as I expressed before, our concerns deal with the illegal uses of crossbows. The cross seasons is something that is out there, going from the author's comments, dealing with the rifle season, I think, is one thing. Competing with other archery seasons is a different issue. We haven't taken a formal position, yes or no, on it at this point in time. I can speak with the commissioner further and come back to you on it.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, if I remember right, a former CO and a former colleague of Representative Cornish's has a book out that's I think how it's labeled, Representative Cornish, Poached, I Got You, or...
Poacher's Crotch, and then there's...
Poacher's Crotch, okay. And if I remember right, one of the chapters, I don't know if you call them chapters, it's a great book for anybody that hasn't read it, by the way. It's fantastic work, and when I'm done, I'll ask Representative Cornish to remind folks of what the colleague... anyway, okay. But one of the chapters dealt with a van that was used, took advantage of the silence of the bull. And one of the only vehicles they were able to use was a big van that had a sliding door big enough for the whole bull to still operate so they could take a deer in silence. Seems to me that the opportunities with a crossbow, now not only will we have the poachers that are worried about at night, where the old saying was, you know, you only fire one shot because one shot you can't tell where it comes from. My guess is with a crossbow, and now they can legally be possessed and they would be more used. I just am with Representative Cornish. I knew they could have been convinced that we possibly should allow them in a shotgun season, but boy, oh boy, I don't think we want to let them in a bull season. I don't know about other folks, but I've gotten a ton of emails across the state of folks that don't want us touching this with a 10-foot pole. And we got to watch out. This is a great state with a strong hunting tradition. And Representative Tower, I like you a lot. I just don't like this bill. Sorry.
Well, can we vote on the amendment to the bill as amended to get done with the Section 97B, Part 035? Any further discussion on that amendment? Being none, all in favor, aye. Opposed?
Motion. No.
Okay, the amendment does prevail. All right, we're back to Representative Cornish.
Just a quick question, Mr. Chair. Representative Cowell, when you came up to me before the committee meeting, you said you wanted to move this into the gun season, asked if that was okay. And that's where my mind was going. It would be a huge advancement for you in this bill if you got it in at all, I think. And so I don't know why you'd want to trail it out into archery season.
I'm going to move that the bill is amended to change the date so that it doesn't include the archery. I know that won't make Representative Tal very happy, but I think that I'll move that. And whatever date that is, Mr. Meyer, can you come up with a date for this thing or some guidance on that? And we'll go to Representative McNamara, unless you have it right on the tip of your tongue.
Mr. Chair, and maybe Mr. Helland, if you just said firearms and muzzleloader seasons, because that date's going to fluctuate a little bit with the calendar. Okay.
Mr. Chair, and that was my point, and that's what I wanted to do, and then I didn't want to get in the battle here, but why wouldn't we just call crossbow an allowable firearm or in the shotgun and firearm season? You know, then it would be, and I guess if you want to extend it into the muzzle loader also, I mean, I think we should start slow and just put it as an allowable use in the firearm season. And maybe you could convince me of the muzzle loader, but I guess I'll defer to you, Mr. Chairman. I'm wondering if we shouldn't be defining it as an allowable firearm in those seasons, just like the bow is now, right? A bow is okay to use in the gun season,
but
maybe we would identify that the crossbow is, and then we wouldn't need to be concerned about the dates.
I'm not,
Mr. Chair. Members, I'm okay with that suggestion. I mean, we're not voting on this right now. We're going to lay over, and we could continue to work on the language as soon as. I mean, it looks like we have the same general idea. And so that could continue to.
What could be deceived?
Well, let's hear from Mr. Boggess and Mr. Meyer on that point.
Mr. Chair, members, defining it to the rifle and muzzleloader season would probably be the best way to do it, given the fluctuating dates. The thing Mr. Boggess is bringing to my attention was under the repealers, 97B.106 deals with our provisions for crossbow permits for hunting and fishing for disabled. I don't know if we would want to. We would not want to repeal the ability for a disabled person to use, as they can right now, a crossbow during other seasons.
We left that, but then that would repeal it. Mr. Helland.
Mr. Chair, right. Representative Howell's bill only deals with deer season, so Mr. Meyer is correct. That allows a special permit to be issued by the commissioner for using a crossbow by a disabled person to hunt other game besides big game.
So we would not want to have that in the repealer then.
It would be best to take that out too.
So then the motion, the amendment that we adopted earlier, we need to do another amendment that would take out the entire line point 1.15 and 1.16, or actually section 2. Just remove section 2. So members, I'll move to remove section 2, which is going to supersede the previous amendment. That in the previous amendment we just did individually 97D035. So now we're removing section 2 from line 1.14 to 1.16. Discussion on that motion. Being none, in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
So that's something.
Okay, that motion does prevail. The bill is amended as amended as amended. All right. Now the issue of how we're going to word the bill. I'm a little concerned of calling a crossbow a firearm, because I think a firearm connotates, you know, in that a gun. I'm a little worried about that we call it a firearm, but I don't know exactly how to get to this. Can we lay this over here for a few moments and let Representative Cal work on that with Mr. Meyer and Mr. Bogus, and then we'll bring this back up at the end of the meeting? Well, first we'll have more testimony. Maybe there's someone else. Representative Cornish.
And that's an excellent idea, because when we talk about firearm, I think then you get into ATF regulations,
right,
about felons. And felons can go out and bow hunt and archery, but they just can't use firearms. So.
Okay, anyone else in the audience to testify for or against the bill? Anyone from enforcement or from the Bow Hunters Association or anyone else that would like to chime in on this bill? There appears to be no one. So we have one person. Welcome, and if you'll state your name and who you represent, and then go ahead with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Sean Ripsenoy. I am the president of Minnesota Bowhunters, Inc. MBI is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. We serve as a voice for bowhunters across Minnesota. It's a little confusing right now, as to with all the amendments. I think maybe suffice to say that MBI has supported and continues to support the existing disability allowance, where hunters with a medical disability that are not able to draw back a bow can use a crossbow during the big game archery season. We support that. But we do not support the general expansion of crossbow use to anyone during the archery season. And the basic premise is that we do not believe that a crossbow is a bow. We think that it's much more similar to a gun, and particularly how it's used in a hunting situation. It's used very much like a gun. Essentially, the big difference in how it's used is that with a vertical bow, the bow hunter draws back the string and the arrow with their own power, with their own strength. Again, crossbows are not bows. I should also add that MBI has not specifically had a position or established a position with respect to crossbows being used during the firearm season, so I cannot speak directly to that. However, in general, we just do not believe that they are a bow and should be left out of the archery seasons.
Well, to testify, I think we've got that.
Good.
We've got that part, and we're headed in another direction here at the moment. So,
very good.
Any questions of
thank
the testifier? Thank you very much. Okay, we're going to lay the bill over for a few minutes. They're working feverishly on this bill to try and get these points that we've been discussing and negotiating. We'll lay it over temporarily, and we'll bring it back up at the end of the hearing. Okay, and the next bill on the agenda is Representative Hoppe. Is that 1538? That is the ammunition. We are not doing that bill.
Yeah, I was going to say I would withdraw that.
Okay, so then the next bill is the archery, now that we're on archery.
House
Bill 1539. Representative Hoppe, you'd like to move the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move 1539 and lay it over for possible inclusion in the larger omnibus bill. Very simply, all this is doing is taking the draw weight for bows from 40 pounds to 30 pounds, the idea being to get more women and youth involved in archery hunting. And with that, I would take any questions, members.
Okay, from the department. Mr. Meyer, can we have you for a minute?
They don't object to that one, Mr. Chair. They didn't like the other one much.
Let me get it on the record. Mr. Meyer, regarding the draw weight, 40 to 30.
Mr. Chair, members, we're okay with this language.
Okay, from the Archery Association, any opinion on this? Okay, anyone to testify for or against the bill? Thank you very much. Any member questions from members? Okay, we'll lay the bill over for a possible inclusion in the Omnibus Game and Fish Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
I can go home now.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Simpson.
Maybe if Representative Hoppe were to get into a weightlifting program, this 30-pound thing would be a factor.
Yeah, right. You wouldn't have to do this.
Yeah.
All right. The next bill before us is Representative Doty.
See, that's
Representative Doty here.
always think that you want to hear like that.
Okay, Representative Doty, I'll move your bill for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Game and Fish Bill, House File 1632, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. A little background information very quickly. Whether you believe it's caused by global warming or it's just part of a natural cycle really doesn't make any difference. The plain truth is that in central Minnesota and my part of the state, it's becoming pretty rare to find any suckers left in our streams when the opening date for spearing and netting them arrives on May 1st. And to some people that doesn't matter much, but to the gentlemen that are seated with me here today, or will be seated with me here today very shortly, and many, many others in my district, it does matter. And they realize that you may not understand as well as they do the pleasure that they get from the whole process of stocking and capturing and preparing and eating suckers. And so they came down here today to tell you that, and hopefully you have information in front of you that shows some of that. At this time, I introduce to you Nolan Spencer and very shortly Jim Sylvester, who can speak about specifics of what they are trying to do here.
Mr. Spencer, welcome, and if you state your name, who you represent, and go ahead with your testimony.
I'm Nolan Spencer, and we are essentially representing ourselves and all of the rest of the people in the state of Minnesota that like to spear suckers in the spring. Mr. Sylvester will join us shortly. He's feeding the parking meter. I'll plead the same case as the elderly gentleman that was here before. I would just like to read this statement so that I don't leave things out. I have a hard time at my age remembering what I had for breakfast. So, I'm Nolan Spencer, originally of Bagley, Minnesota. I currently live near Deerwood, Minnesota, having retired from teaching biology in the Crosby-Arrington schools for 35 years. The gentleman who will join us here shortly is Jim Sylvester, originally of St. Vincent, Minnesota, way up on the Red River of the North. Jim currently lives near Little Falls, Minnesota, having taught elementary school in the Crosby-Arrington schools, Randall, Little Falls, and then retiring as an elementary school principal from Little Falls. Other than being friends for about 42 years, we share something else: a lifelong tradition of spearing spring-run suckers in the streams of Minnesota. We started as kids. In the past decade, this has become increasingly difficult to do so. This is not because the fish are no longer there. Quite contrary, the problem is that the long-standing arbitrary opening date for spearing or dip netting suckers has been May 1st of each year. This date is no longer workable, primarily due to climatic change. Later fall freeze-up of our lakes, thinner ice, higher winter temperatures and continual earlier ice outs on our lakes have caused the fish to make their spring spawning runs approximately 7 to 10 days earlier, according to our observations. This has created a catch-22 situation for spring sucker spearers. Page 56 of the 2007 Minnesota DNR fishing regulations lists the opening of the sucker spearing season as May 1st, 2007. The first year I went sucker spearing with my uncle Ainer Dillon was 1948. And I was 9 years old. We still had some snow on the ground. The opening date that year was May 1st, just as it is now. 59 years have passed without a change. Page 16 of the same document, the DNR fishing regulations, states that suckers, among other species, are, quote, underutilized, unquote. The problem is that we and our fellow sucker fishers would like to utilize these fish, but the law as currently written does not allow us to do so. The proposed legislation being discussed today could, and I repeat, could change this. It's our considered opinion that bureaucratic inertia will result in no change in the current situation. The two key phrases which would lead us to believe that the two phrases, quote, the commissioner may allow, unquote, and, quote, regional fisheries chiefs in any of the department's regions may recommend, unquote, would cause this. We, after lengthy debate, would recommend a three-zone or a four-zone opening date construct, with the three-zone construct being preferable. And I provided maps of a three-zone construct and a four-zone construct. The April 20th opening date for Zone 2 on this map was selected because of observations of the changed status of spring sucker spawning runs in our area. As previously stated, these runs are approximately 10 days earlier than they were a decade ago. If such a construct, however modified, should be adopted, it would be within the purview of the commissioner and or the regional fisheries chiefs to postpone these dates and notify the fishing public by print the electronic means. This way, the fishermen can have a solid date within their zone to begin fishing unless otherwise advised by the DNR. We have a myriad of deer hunting zones in Minnesota along with their respective opening and closing dates. We have opening and closing time zones established as to when legal shooting hours are, ranging from east to west. We have situations where spring angling is delayed due to late spawning runs. For example, the walleye opener is occasionally delayed in the Gull Lake Narrows north of Brainerd, close to where I live. Beginning on May 1st, 2004, Jim and I decided to check streams for fish as far north as we had to go to find some running. We ended up at Ditch 30, a small tributary of Shotley Brook which runs into Upper Red Lake. This was approximately 135 miles north of our home, my home in Deerwood, further for him. Shotley Brook was posted due to spawning walleyes, so we, along with many other spears, were able to take some suckers home for my smokehouse. We made the trip, along with another friend, on May 1st of 2005, again with good results. Not so on the opening day of 2006. We, along with two friends, could find only one small male sucker in Ditch 30. Local people told us that the run was made the week before. On the way home, we checked numerous streams with the same result. No spawning fish observed. In 2004, I wrote to Ron Pyre of the DNR Fisheries Division describing the situation I've outlined here for you today. His reply was that he believed that the current early springs, etc., were, quote, part of a cycle, unquote. If this is true, then we should return to the conditions we had decades ago. A cycle is a circle. I replied to his letter with a question. I asked if the weather and the spring sucker runs would return to what they were within my lifetime. Counter to his statement that the DNR didn't have sufficient personnel to monitor streams, Carl Hadritz, our local conservation officer, stated that he saw no problem with an earlier opener. Additionally, he stated that poaching of spring run walleyes and northern pike, which used to be an annual problem, has become nearly non-existent. Spring poaching of these species has been the established reason for the traditional May 1st opener. In conclusion, we would recommend that the proposed changes and make it legal to maintain a spring tradition for many Minnesotans. Thank you.
Question? Rick, some hobby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I should know this, but we can't seem to figure this out. Are suckers native to Minnesota?
Oh, I know.
Carp or not. Okay.
Like muskies.
Okay. Can I ask you one other quick question?
Sure.
And you covered this in your testimony, but I just want to be clear. On line 1.12, regional fisheries chiefs in any of the department's regions may recommend.
That's the way the bill is written.
Okay. And I'm okay with that. I'm just wondering, does that mean that, I mean, it'd be more likely, I would think, that any of the regional fisheries chiefs would recommend to the commissioner that they do that. Can the commissioner do this currently by rule?
We'll get the department up here next.
Okay.
Other questions for the test fire?
Department.
Okay. We need the department up, Ms. Fire. Thank you for your testimony.
Go for some sucker right now. Okay.
Fire, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, Ron Fire with DNR Fisheries. And our concern with the bill would be the overlap of spawning season with northern pike, walleye, and other game fish. And whether the climate change occurs, there's an overlap in spawning temperatures. So you're going to see northern and walleye in the stream about the same time, even if you moved it up. So there is a concern with intentional or accidental spearing. White sucker do what's called striping as they come in, the males. Pretty hard to tell sometimes between a sucker and a walleye. So our first concern is with the game fish that are in the streams at that point in time. There is a workload issue. We'd almost, the zone concept I hadn't heard before, but I know if we need to go out on a regional basis and look stream by stream at whether or not the temperature there, the game fish have moved out, and then post and let the public know electronically and in print, that's a pretty busy fisheries time too. I've not heard, and I'm not discounting the fact that Representative Doty and others have. I haven't had any calls in the last few years about this issue. So I'm not sure. Usually the call's coming from a school principal or teacher that's concerned that their kids are playing hooky to go out and spear, so we know that they do that. Mm-hmm. But our main concern would be the game fish, the workload, and then enforcement has an issue because statute right now says that you can't possess a spear in or around waters prior to May 1st. So if you open up some waters and not others, there are some enforcement issues there. So we have some concerns with the bill.
So, Ms. Beyer, you're saying the department opposes the bill?
Mr. Chairman, when we talked to the fisheries managers, none of the fisheries managers felt that we should move the season.
Okay. Mr. Sylvester, you here. Thank you very much. Did Mr. Sylvester, do you have a question for the department, Representative Cornish, remember?
No, I have a
question. Okay, we got a couple questions, Mr. Beyer. Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Pryor, I remember as my youth, and it was interesting, Representative Simpson and I both did a lot of spearing in our youth, and I can remember being reminded of the local CO that it was May 1st. In our case, it was carp. We were interested in spearing as soon as May 1st came along. Doesn't the department now have the ability to adjust these dates as see fit? And is the current date May 1st, I believe, down in my area, and is it statewide May 1st currently?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, it is May 1st statewide. By rule, the department can be more restrictive to protect the species, but usually if it's a liberalized season, then you folks need to give us that direction.
A quick follow-up.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Pryor, you couldn't make it April 20th in the southern part of the state currently. Is it in statute May 1st? The way I read the statute, it looked like the commissioner was free to set the days for spearing rough fish.
Mr. Chairman, I think if you look at 97C345, it says, except a specifically authorized, a person may not take fish from the third Monday in February to April 30th with a spear, fish trap net, dip net, seine, or other device capable of taking fish. So it's a statutory established date.
Mr. Chair, you must have attended a lot more law school than I did. I missed that. Sorry.
Representative Moe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Pryor, could you speak to the population of suckers? And it seems like there's a lot of them, and I'm not quite frankly sure, no disrespect, why somebody would want to eat them, but that's all right. you know, it seems, now Representative Cornish is looking at me funny, too. Could you speak to the population of, and so specifically what I'm hearing from you is it's not an issue of the population, but mistaken identity for walleye. I mean, is that what I'm hearing?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that's correct. In a large portion of our waters, there's not an issue with the white sucker population. There are a few lakes up in the northeast part of the state where forage is becoming an issue, that we're a little bit more worried about it. I wouldn't anticipate that the spearing one way or the other would make a difference on sucker populations. Our concern revolves around impacts to game fish, the time commitment, and then the enforcement issues.
Representative Simpson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, according to this bill, I mean, this could, it just basically gives the department the opportunity to do this. So it isn't making it mandatory. So to me, I don't see any reason why we couldn't do this. And if they see it as necessary, if they deem that the run is there, they can do it. If not, then it goes back to May 1st. At least it gives them the latitude to make the change.
I think, Representative Simpson, you're referring to the May on 1.9, line 1.9. Is that correct?
That or line 113, too, Mr. Chair.
Representative Cornish.
Just a comment, Mr. Chair. I feel strongly both ways.
That's kind of a normal thing for you, Representative Cornish.
Up in Ireland, you know, up north of 210, spearing suckers is so popular that, and they are a good food source. You can can them, can salmon type, or you can pickle them, as I used to do with white satin wine. In fact, we used to let school out on May 1st up there, because if you didn't, there would be so few people in the classroom. So it's a huge sport. But in the same respect, I worked in the creeks and protecting the game fish, and the way it works is if the water temperature rises, the certain amount of fish will run at different stages of temperature, and you know, I believe that the northern will run first, and the walleye, and then the sucker will finish up. And if perfect world, as the temperature comes up very slowly, one will run and get out of the creek, and next will get out of the creek, and finally you got just suckers, you just go in and spear. However, when the temperature rises all of a sudden, you get all two or three brands in there, and the kids and everybody else runs up and down the creek, and it's just mud, and you're spearing, it wakes in the water, and that's when the damage to the game fish occurs. So as we're thinking through this, if we could defer to the wisdom of the protection of these, because some of these big hogs land there 15 pounds, they got millions of eggs in them, people grab them by the eyes and take off with them, and so it's important we protect them.
All right, other questions of Mr. Pryor? Nope. Okay, I think we have Mr. Sylvester. Are you back here? Okay, come forward and we'll finish the bill up.
Mr. Chair, do we have any money in the budget for a field trip? Maybe if we saw this firsthand.
A little snack.
Mr. Sylvester, welcome.
I'm Jim Sylvester. I live in Little Falls. I thank you. I hope that we're able, for your consideration, a change in the timeline so that we can continue with our tradition so that people in northern Minnesota can go out and have fun and enjoy it.
Thank you. Any questions? No questions. Representative Doty, any further final comments on House File 1362? I think I said 1632 originally. House File 1362.
Mr. Chair and members, you've certainly heard many people talk to the popularity of this, so I don't have to stress again that we're not just talking the opinion of these two gentlemen that came home with one small sucker last year and wanted to do a little better. We're talking about hundreds and hundreds of people that make this a big social event.
With that
in mind, if there's no further questions.
We'll lay the bill over for possible inclusion. I'll renew my motion. Thank you very much. Thank you for coming and testifying on the bill.
Thank you.
House File 1362 is laid over. Okay, next item. House File 1749, Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Unlike some of the previous bills, this one's not controversial. So, Mr. Chair, if this one will be very easy.
So you move the bill, Representative McNamara?
I'd like to move House File 1749 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Game and Fish Bill. House File 1749 would instruct, might be a better way, the commissioner to use expedited rules and change the limit for rooster pheasants from 2 to 3 after the 16th day of the season, and I think it would probably be best if Mr. Bogus or Mr. Meyer would also speak to the bill. I believe you've got as you remember, Mr. Chair, on our conference committee last year, we asked the DNR to look into this possibility, and they've written a letter, and I don't know if I need to really go over the letter. It says that it wouldn't hurt the population at all, but something about the satisfaction of getting your limit would be a reason to not change it to 3.
Well, Representative McNamara, I think if the satisfaction of getting your limit, we need to move the walleye limit to 1. That way all the fishermen would be satisfied, because we heard from the department that the average catch is like 3. So, I mean, move it to 1, everybody would be satisfied. So, anyway, Mr. Bogus is here before us. Mr. Bogus, to the
Mr.
bill.
Mr. Chair, though, to that point of the limit of 1 walleye, when you and I went walleye fishing, we didn't keep any of them. We just kept throwing them back. And
why don't you tell them how many we caught?
We caught a lot. I said the challenge would be to see if we could catch 100 in one day. Let the members know, Mr. Chair, we were not in the great state of Minnesota. We were in the Providence of Ontario.
He had a damn good guide. Okay, yeah. Mr. Bogus.
Mr. Chair, members, Ed Bogus, DNR, Division of Fish and Wildlife, and this is not an issue of biological impacts to pheasant populations. As with most small game, and even especially with pheasants where we're only hunting the roosters, the bag limit during the season, the way we have the season time, does not have an effect on the population. The bag limits are intended to distribute harvest through the season and among hunters. So this truly is one of those social issues. We've not increased the daily bag limit since the early 60s. We did increase the possession limit. For all other small game species, the possession limit is double the daily limit. But back about 15 years ago, we raised the possession limit on pheasants because we know it's kind of a destination species for a lot of people to go out, spend a long weekend hunting pheasants. And so we did We did increase the possession limit to triple the daily limit, which is 6 birds. So I guess it's something where we're not, you know, we are currently authorized by statute to go up to a daily limit of 5, but we've chosen not to go above 2, and we're awaiting further direction.
A question. Representative Cornish, you want to talk about using crossbows to take pheasants? Or?
No.
Okay. Representative Hobby.
Mr. Chair, this is a related pheasant question, and I don't know that we have the answer for this yet, but do we know yet what the harvest was last pheasant season?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hoppe, we won't have the harvest estimates until early summer, but we expect it to be in the 500,000 range.
Okay.
Mr. Bogus, just want to hear it from you one more time, make sure I got it. There's no biological reason that this bill is inappropriate, that the pheasant population, as the bill is drafted, is not in any risk whatsoever in terms of the population.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Further questions? Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Chair. Do you represent McNamara? I thought you might be donating the pheasants. But,
maybe we put a dollar on a license. Free cleaning.
I'd be able to do that if we bump it up.
Anybody can testify for or against the bill?
I actually did have a question related to...
go ahead, Representative Hanson.
Representative McNamara, you and I had talked about the hen pheasant language that's in statute, and I know we don't want to eliminate the hen pheasant opportunity for falconers, but the way the language... remnant language is for hen pheasant, it still allows hen pheasant. I just wondered if we could continue to have that conversation as the bill moves on.
Well, Representative Hanson, if you for discussion purposes want to remove that one hen pheasant that the agency is allowed to currently do other than for falconry, I don't have any problem with that. I think the agency could speak to it, but I certainly hope they're not proposing to start shooting hens.
Mr. Bogus.
Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara, we're not. We have talked about it over the years because the only reason that we don't is because you can't tell them apart. We do allow shooting hen rough grouse because you can't tell them apart on the wing. So, again, it would not be with the timing of the season that we have. It would not be an impact on the population to allow some shooting hens, but we're not proposing to do that.
Okay. Further questions on the bill? Anybody testify for or against the bill as presented? House File 1749. Being none, thank you, Representative McNamara. We'll lay the bill over for possible inclusion. Okay, the next bill is... we're going to bring back the bill of the session, House File 1241. And we have an amendment. Is that being passed out? It must be being passed out right now. Now, bear in mind, members, the bill, House File 1241, has been previously amended, and now this amendment is being proposed by the author. And we'll wait till it's passed out to everyone.
Right. Well, it's passed out, Mr. Chair. I checked the door. I didn't see anything there, so.
All right, Representative Tao, to the, this would be members, the 1241A1 amendment with the handwriting on line 1.17 and 1.18, as I see it. Is that correct, Mr. Helm? To the amendment. Go ahead and explain the amendment.
Member, basically just clarify the language on the agreement of making it during the firearm season. So.
That's a correct explanation, Mr. Allen, Council Allen? Okay, any questions on the amendment? Okay, all in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, very good. I'll renew my motion to lay over House File 1241 as amended for possible inclusion. And now we have... House File 1116, which is the agency game and fish bill, as well as other items. We have an amendment to the bill that I'm offering, and so I want to move the bill and then amend it with my amendment. Okay, so I'll move the bill to be referred to House File 1116 to be referred to the Committee on Natural Resources and Environment, which is Representative Eakins, committee. And the first amendment is an author's amendment. It's the 1116A1 amendment. And I guess rather than explain the entire amendment, this has been out, members have had a chance to look at it. If you have specific questions on the amendment, I'll be willing to answer the amendment, or we'll get the people up here to answer the questions to the members. No questions on the amendment? All right. Okay. Well, so then I would make a move. One moment, please, while you're looking at that amendment.
Okay. Also, as well as the A1 amendment, then members, we have the bills that were laid over that we have for possible inclusion, so I'd like to amend those into the amendment. And we'll go through those each and individually. So we have House File 1241 was the TAO amendment, or a TAO bill as amended. House File 1749 is the McNamara Pheasant Bill that was not amended. It's the bill as presented. House File 1632 is the Doty Bill. 1362, the Doty Bill. House File 1539 is the Hoppe Bill regarding the draw weight for the bows from 40 to 30. And House File 1211 is the Otremba bill regarding the smokeless gunpowder. So all of those bills plus the A1 amendment are, my motion is to amend all of those House files plus the A1 amendment into House File 1116. Discussion on that. And let me also say that as we've been working on this bill, and I have a list here, we have in my amendment, in my A1 amendment, we have a total of 6 DFL amendments, bills, and 4 GOP. And in the amendment that we just made, it gets us up to a total of 9 and 6. So, I mean, we've been able to do a lot of things across the aisle on this amendment to work out the bill. So, so to the amendment, the A1 amendment, as well as the House files that have been amended into the amendment. Discussion on the amendment. Representative Cornish.
I only plan, I think, on voting against one of these, and it's just a ban on smokeless powder. I suppose we're going to vote on the amendment altogether, though.
That was my plan.
If you would, Mr. Chairman, I just want to make it clear to the committee, I sure meant no disrespect to Representative O'Tremlin. She's up here. I was kind of surprised. She thought, I just asked the guy to talk about what he had said, and I sure didn't mean any harm to him or on that issue. It's just the fact that we had a big philosophical difference in the black powder when he was talking about it. You can buy it. You can buy it at Sportsman's Paradise. You can buy it at Gander Mountain. You can buy it at Cabela's. And one can will last you for 3 years, even if you're an avid shooter. And so it costs isn't a big deal. And so I just had some problems with what was being said. So.
Okay. I'm glad that you got that on the record. Members on the amendment as amended, which is the amendment plus the House files. Further discussion on the amendment. Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I understand your amendment incorporates all those numbers you just mentioned.
The ones that I just read off.
So if there was one in particular that we would like deleted, would you want us to refer to it?
Okay, so if you have one that you particularly, we can pull.
I didn't hear that. All the amendments we've heard today so far. How?
That's what I'm doing right now.
I don't like that. Did we hear the hand there?
So, Representative McNamara, which is the bill that you want to discuss?
Huh? Well, Mr. Chair, I was thinking probably the most controversial would be the
the first two that we heard today, House File 1211 and House File 1241, I would think that both those bills, Mr. Chair, deserve a vote in this committee on whether or not they're going to be included.
Okay. Did that cover yours as well? I think it did.
Representative Otremba's bill 1211, the smokeless powder, and its representative Tao's 1241, the crossbow bills. I think those are the
most. Other members want to take a vote on these bills individually? Representative Hagbarth, I see you preparing to speak.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I have a real problem with the House File 1241, so I would speak to that one.
Well, that one we pulled out.
Yeah, okay.
I'm going to pull it out of my amendment here just in a matter of moments. Anyone else? Okay, so the amendment then, the actual amendment will be to the 1116A1 is to include House File 1539, House File 1749, and House File 1362 in the amendment. And then we will vote separately on the other two bills that Representative McNamara, Representative Cornish discussed. Any further discussion? There being none, in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion does prevail. The amendment as amended is does prevail. Now, okay, so we'll go, before we go to the bill, we'll now discuss a motion. I'll make a motion to include House File 1211 into House File 1116. That is the Otremba bill, the smokeless powder bill. To that motion, discussion on the motion. Representative Cornish.
No, I have no discussion. I laid it all out how I thought.
Okay. Anyone else?
Mr. Chair, just...
I'm
sorry to be late. I had a bill up another.
Go ahead.
Committee, so I missed that. Is my understanding correct that smokeless powder was previously legal and now it's not, and we want to keep it not, or at least if those who are Representative Cornish wants to keep it the way it is currently. But it used to be legal, correct?
And my recollection, Representative Moe, is last year in Representative Hagbarth's committee, this started with Representative Poppy, who had either an amendment or a bill, I don't remember which one, that then ultimately got on the game and fish bill and made it inappropriate or illegal to use. Mr. Meyer, did you have something on this?
Mr. Chair, members, no, a different provision in your A1 amendment, but...
Okay.
Just one follow-up question, Mr. Chairman. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of people that actually have equipment they purchased previously before we made this illegal. Is that correct? So, okay.
Well, I would assume that that's correct.
Right. That they no longer can use. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Further discussion on the 1211 House File to be incorporated into the A1 amendment under a separate action. Representative Hoppe.
Mr. Chair, I spoke about this a little bit earlier, and we just did this last year, and we did talk about it quite a bit in committee, being, I'm a deer hunter, I'm not a muzzleloader hunter, but the idea originally was that we wanted to have a special season because it was, kind of a primitive firearm, and originally people were not wearing blaze orange, and, were wearing leather and wool and things like that, and we've kind of progressed to the point where there's not really that much difference between this and a regular rifle in terms of accuracy and other things other than it being single shot. And if we're going to have a special season for muzzleloading hunting, I would argue that we make it more special. And we just did it last year, and I think I would recommend that we leave it in and at least look at it for another couple of years and see if it's a good thing or not.
Okay, Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, just for clarification of Representative Moe's question, there's no equipment difference. I mean, you can take a black powder and you can shoot smokeless powder, you can black powder, Pyrodex, or GoX, or anything you want in it, so it wouldn't really affect anybody that's using equipment now if you kept it illegal. It's just, you can use either powder in the rifle. If you've got a good rifle, if you've got an old blunderbuss that was made in Kentucky and Daniel Boone days, you might not want to put DuPont 4031 in it, but
put it on eBay.
But it shouldn't make any difference in the equipment.
Okay. Further discussion on the motion to incorporate House File 1241 into the A1 amendment.
One more thing, and then I'll be quiet on this one. I know a lot of guys that use their inline muzzleloader during the shotgun season, around here, not far from the metro area. And they do it because it's a lot more accurate, a lot farther out, and especially with smokeless powder, you know, there's really not that much difference. So I would recommend against including this.
All right. All in favor of the 1211 being incorporated into the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails.
Division.
Division has been called. All in favor? Opposed? The motion does prevail 7-6. The A1 amendment is amended with House File 1211. Now to the next amendment.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Good ears.
7-6.
Okay, now House File 1241, which is the Tau bill as amended. Same procedure, amending it into the A1 amendment. Discussion on the bill, 1241. No discussion. Representative McNamara. Oh, I thought you were waving.
Oh,
okay.
I'm with you. No discussion.
All right. In favor of the bill, aye?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No. I'm not going to ask for a division. I think my hearing would go up on that one. The motion does not prevail on House 1241. Thank you for not calling a roll call on that, members.
Mr. Chair.
President Bingham.
Just a point of procedural clarification. I don't know if I have a bunch of old bills that were left in my file or if there are a bunch of bills that were put in here for possible inclusion at a later date. I'm looking at, like, file 191, 1021. Were those put in here for possible inclusion, or did I just leave those in there from a prior meeting?
I haven't got to them yet.
That is for later today. 1021 is a bill that we're going to hear after this bill.
Okay.
How about what?
191.
191. That is that your amendment, Representative
yep.
Hagler? And that amendment is coming forward on this bill, as I understand. So do we want to do that now, Representative Hagbarth, and then amend the A1 amendment?
If you're ready for amendments, Mr. Chairman.
We are ready.
A couple other ones for the bill.
We're ready to amend. So Representative Hagbarth has the, what is the number on that amendment?
Well, it's a House File, the language contained in House File 191.
Okay, one moment, please. Okay. So, so what we're going to do first, Representative Hagbarth, is put A1 as amended on the bill and then amend your bill if it passes onto the main bill. So further discussion on the A1. Oh, Representative, Mr. Meyer, how did I know you were going to raise your hand? Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members, I just wanted to bring to your attention one provision that was discussed in committee that we did lay on the table that's dealt with. It's on page 3, beginning on line 3.22. Disabled hunters hunting from a vehicle. This is a bill that Representative Rukavina has introduced. We had a hearing in here. The testifiers from Capable Partners and Representative Rukavina said that with DNR and everyone's going to try to sit down and work it out. We can't come up with a solution that deals with what Representative Rukavina wants to do. He's trying to solve a problem in his district for a person who has a chronic disease but is not required to take oxygen. By removing the requirement for a person to have oxygen for this disabled hunter from a vehicle permit, any type of chronic internal disease, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, you know, you go to your doctor now and get a note and it'll allow you to be able to hunt out of a motor vehicle with that permit. We tried to work with the language, tried to come up with some language to deal with his constituent. It's just We couldn't come up with a solution. This is something I think if Roger Houck knew was here today, he would be here to testify against his provision. Opening this, if you're going to open it up to take out the requirement for oxygen, you might as well give it to DHS then, because everybody will be applying for these permits, and we'll actually just allow people to hunt out of cars then. So,
okay, well, I was wondering if we could add on to that Rukavina bill, uncased guns, if that would fire up things. That'd help them out as well.
And crossbows.
And crossbows as well. There's the Magpie.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would make the motion to delete that from the amendment, line 3.22 through line 4.17.
Okay, Representative Hagbarth wants to make my life miserable with Representative Rukavina.
And mine.
Okay, discussion on the proposed amendment. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, I just have a question on 3.33, 3.34 then. So you're concerned that the requirement for the position statement isn't enough of a guarantee of the validity of the claim?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, the way that this provision has come about, it has a long legislative history going back and forth. The real requirement was that that the language that they're striking out, 3.31 to 3.32, that requires the person to use supplemental oxygen to assist breathing. What this permit allows, you're asking for a permit to discharge a firearm from within your vehicle. A person who doesn't need oxygen can just get a launcher and sit right outside of their vehicle. It's a fine line, but I know it's one that capable partners and disabled hunters fight very strong and hard for, and I just wanted to bring that to your awareness since he's not here today.
Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chairman, to that point, Representative, what I sat in the committee for the disabled permit years ago up at Camp Ripley and other places, and we had a disabled doctor and a disabled hunter in a wheelchair and other disabled people, and we had this combined decision to lay it out this way. And like the DNR says here, if you open it up, to tell you the truth, there are probably not any doctors in there, but you can get a doctor to say whatever you want. And that's the problem we found. Doctors had no buy-in to the thing. A lot of them didn't hunt, and they were just saying whatever they put on the thing, and we were issuing permits to beat the band until they tightened it up. So,
Mr. Kelleher, you got anything on this?
Good afternoon, members of the committee. Again, my name is Tom Kelleher. I'm here representing the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association. Not to confuse this issue much, but I guess I have to. We discussed this issue. We felt that adding chronic was not reasonable, but deleting the supplemental oxygen requirement was reasonable. So that's sort of what we thought, and we had about a 15-20-minute discussion about it. It being a permanent disability, we thought that the requirement of supplemental oxygen was just really restrictive. So that's our opinion.
Representative Ackbar, opinion on that? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The amendment is before us to remove the Rukavina language. And I'm probably going to see him tonight. So,
well, Mr. Chairman, and as long as you did ask, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I am a member of Capable Partners, and I've been out with these folks hunting. And this is the number one issue. I was at the Capable Partners banquet, not this last Saturday night, but the Saturday night before, and this was their number one issue. They do not want to see this turned around. This would open it up, and this would be greatly devastating to the physically handicapped hunters.
Further discussion? Being none, all in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion does prevail. Bill is amended. Or the A1 amendment is amended. All right. Now, that satisfy you, Mr. Meyer? No more problems you have for us here at the moment?
So I see Representative Rupert Zuna.
All right. So now, members, we'll vote on the A1 amendment to adopt that into House File 1116. Further discussion? There being none, in favor of that amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion does prevail. The bill as amended, and now we will take amendments to the bill as amended. Representative Hagbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that the language contained in House File 191 be an amendment to House File 1116. And, Mr. Chairman, we did amend this in a previous committee, and I think we eliminated subdivision 2 from this language. and we didn't want it to be changing the law that you could fish with two hooks. We just wanted to change the law that said you could fish with two lines.
That is correct. We did remove in the previous committee all of Subdivision 2.
And that's the way I would like it, Mr. Chairman. We only want to keep in Subdivision 1, and I would move that amendment so that we can fish with two lines in the state of Minnesota.
Discussion. Representative Wagenius.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gavagas, will you remind us how you feel about this particular amendment on the two lines?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, I'm going to ask Ron Pyre, our Fisheries Management Chief, to do that.
Mr. Pyre.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Ron Pyre. Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, we have... fisheries managers have some concerns that by going to two lines will clearly increase the harvest of fish. And the issue in Minnesota from the last testimony is one of quality over harvest. Got a lot of small northern, a lot of small bluegills, but the issue ends up being one of quality over harvest. And we're concerned that by increasing the harvest rates, it's going to lead to increased regulation and bag limit restrictions. And it does not address situations like Mille Lacs Lake and Red Lake, where it might actually push the harvest to the point where we would need to shut the fishery down if the two-line provision would increase the harvest to that extent.
President Rodriguez.
Thank you for testifying. Help me here, too. If I recall correctly, there is some noise. Choose my words very carefully here. Folks in the hunting area were upset about fishing spending more money out of the pot than hunting. And if we were to have two lines rather than one in the future, and we had to do more stocking, where would we get the money?
Ms. Byer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, there has been an issue, some concern with the amount of game and fish fund dollars from wildlife license fees and fisheries fees. The two lines may or may not lead to more stocking, but it would, because putting small fish in doesn't necessarily lead to larger fish, but it would certainly entail additional regulations and management of those waters to try to keep the quality and quantity of fish out there that satisfies most anglers, and funding for all natural resource programs is certainly a key issue for us right now. Would be something that we would need to factor in and prioritize.
Genius.
Thank you. When I do regulations and management, what I see is dollar bills, and it seems to me that if this were to go forward, I'm going to oppose it for the reasons you gave, but if this is to go forward, we would need to see a fiscal note on this portion of this bill, because my understanding is there isn't money in the pot for additional regulations and management.
Further discussion on the Ackbar Amendment on the House File 191. Anyone in the audience like to testify for or against the amendment?
Well, Mr. Chairman, just a final word. I think this is a very, very popular issue. Everyone I talk to would like to see this. They go to other states surrounding us, and most states fish with even more than two lines. And I just don't see why we shouldn't be allowing this in the state of Minnesota. It's one line. It's almost all states have more than one line, Mr. Chairman. And the state of Wisconsin and other states, they have very, very good fishing, and I don't see that this is going to be a problem at all. So I just encourage a yes vote.
Further discussion? In favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
No. Motion does not prevail. All right, Representative Hansen has an amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A070171 amendment with one correction, not including line 2.20.
2.20. All right, Representative Hansen moves House File, amendment 0171. That would be the House File 1116 as amended. Representative Hansen, can you explain the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and the members of the committee. The first two provisions strike sections relating to living on the property for the landowner tenant, turkey license and deer license. We did discuss this last year, and I talked with the DNR about this. They suggested talking to the farm groups because of the history relating to this. I believe Mr. Raddatz from the Farm Bureau is there. I know the Farmers Union is unable to be here, but they're supportive. What this does is provide for greater access, that you can have landowners and tenants go into the pool for the drawing if they don't have to live on the property. And then when they go into that pool and are issued a license, then they are eligible, or they have to provide access to that land to, for the public. So that's the first page. The second page, it has the provision that we passed last year where a hunter taking a deer that is not a whitetail or mule deer must report that type of deer within 7 days. And what I'm doing is removing the non-penalty provision so that this game statute is the same as other game statutes. And then also taking the parallel language relating to reporting and applying that to the Asian carp. So that if someone takes a Asian carp species, that they would report that to the DNR, and they have the 7-day provision for doing that. So I think that helps promote identification of the Asian carp. We've had the video in testimony here, and helping raise awareness on the Asian carp and getting them reported if somebody's catching is important. And then I strike line 2.20.
And Representative Hansen, what is the striking line 2.20 do?
That was relating to hen pheasants, like what I talked with Representative McNamara about.
Okay, to the amendment, Representative Hobby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hansen, does Subdivision 7, which is the deer part, does that apply to archery licenses only?
Representative Hansen.
I have the statute right here. If you could help me, Representative
Hoppe, I'm sorry. Line 1.19 says, in deer permit areas that have deer archery licenses to take additional deer under Section 97B.301, Subdivision 4. So I'm wondering if the whole subdivision applies to archery only, or if this is shotgun or rifle.
Mr. Bogus?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hoppe, that's a provision that's in law to identify which permit areas this applies to, because we go through a process each year of predicting which permit areas, and this really dates back to when most of them were lottery, but which lottery areas we think are going to be undersubscribed by at least 10%, and then we open those up for archery bonus licenses. But this provision does apply to firearms and to... Well, it just applies to firearms because they can already take antlerless deer during the archery season.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, as far as Subdivision 4 goes, on line 1.4, the separation selection of eligible licenses, I think every year since I've been here, we've had a discussion about this provision and statute, whether you have to live on or live off, and whether this is fair or unfair, and... You know, I guess I don't know one way or the other, but I think this committee should at least have some discussion on this before we vote on this. Because, you know, if we pass this, we're just going to come back next year and pass it back the other way. Things like a badminton, I don't know what you call that little thing, but...
Kind of like smoke with powder.
Yeah.
Okay, anyone else like to... Representative Hansen.
I know Mr. Kelleher is here, and if he wanted to express his opinion, I did provide it.
Mr. Kelleher, you're very popular today, but it's going to be temporary.
You mean like this morning, Mr. Kelleher?
Yeah, that's correct.
Good afternoon again, members of the committee. My name is Tom Kelleher, representing the Deer Hunters Association. I worked with Representative Hansen on this a couple years ago, and the fastest way, I don't think we object. I think we've already decided whether these landowners get the free permit, and this would just, you know, remove the restriction of living on the land.
So I think we've already agreed that the policy of letting the landowners, who basically feed our deer for us a lot of times, to have a permit to take a deer free.
Okay, Mr. Bogus, department's position.
Mr. Chair, we've also talked to Representative Hansen about this in the past, and just to go back in history a little bit, is that this was something the department had favored, a system where the people who get preference are people who've applied and not been drawn, and you just sort of wait in line and take your turn and eventually get drawn. But the origin of the landowner preference was for landowners, and originally some of this wording was very intentional to make it more directed at people who are making their living off the land rather than people who owned recreational land. So, you know, we're limited by to no more than 20%, so it's the will of the committee and the legislature is that if you want to open the pool up wider to who gets those 20%.
Representative McBride, do you have a question?
No, sir. I'll take Mr. Chairman, and either for the author of the amendment or for Mr. Bogus, and then I want to get Mr. Kelleher's take on it. On line 2.12, removing this part that says there's not going to be a violation, what does that now do? What is the fine or the fee or the fine going to be, or what ramifications are we going to have now if we eliminate this out of statute? How much are they going to have to pay? Is it a petty misdemeanor? What are we talking about here?
Mr. Chair, Jim Conrad, Enforcement.
Welcome.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that would result, it would fall back to a misdemeanor violation.
Not a petty misdemeanor.
Not a petty misdemeanor unless you would designate it as such.
Further questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Ackford.
And so this would be something that would go on your criminal record.
That's correct.
Mr. Kelleher?
Representative Hackbar?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hackbar, I think just to be safe from my perspective and my employment with the Minnesota Deer Association, that having it be a petty misdemeanor would be more preferable to us. I think what Representative Hansen's trying to do, which we greatly understand and support, is we just want people to go ahead and do the reporting. In our discussions in the back, I felt that, you know, chances are that maybe once in someone's life they're going to shoot one of these odd deer, whatever you want to call them. We're using another term in the back. And then, you know, the chances that you don't report and getting caught for that is probably pretty rare. But I think for my personal preference as the representative of the General Association, to have it be a petty misdemeanor is a lot less risky, and we can go forward from there and see how it works out.
Representative Mark, do you have an amendment?
Well, I thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't know what the amendment would be unless Mr. Helling could come up with something that would state, such as Mr. Kelleher said, changing this to a petty misdemeanor or some lesser penalty than a misdemeanor, which would go on your criminal record. And Representative Hansen and I have had this discussion before on other bills, turning people into criminals, and I don't want to do that. I want people to report this. And we need to be tough on them to report it, but I don't think we need to be turning people into criminals if they should violate this. So that's one issue that I have with the amendment, Mr. Chairman, and I'm going to have another one.
Okay, to the point, Representative Hansen.
To the point, Mr. Chair, I think that 97A.301 are the general penalty provisions that apply to the Game and Fish Law. So what we're saying here is that this provision in 2.9, 2.10, and 2.11, that applies just like other game and fish laws covered under 97A.301.
Okay, your next item, Representative Hagberg.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't think we should leave this one until we get this one resolved. Either I'm going to make a motion to eliminate this change on 2.12, or if we can come to a compromise with some language that would make this a petty misdemeanor charge as opposed to a misdemeanor. One or the other, and I'm willing to negotiate it and work it out.
Why don't we listen to your next point, and then we'll just temporarily lay this over and go back to the bill, and then we'll come back to that. And maybe between now and then you can work something out. Representative Cornish.
To this point that Representative Hackbar was just making, if we could clarify, maybe Officer Conrad, with this 2.12, if that's... if you're under 97A.301, If you're back under there, is this count as a big game violation? You know, you get so many of them within a 3-year period and you lose your license?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, I believe as a misdemeanor it would count as a violation in your within 3-year period and result in a revocation.
Okay, we're going to lay this amendment over if you two want to work on this for a few moments.
Okay, and I did have another point to
go ahead
the amendment.
Another point then, Representative.
To the amendment, and maybe we can work on this at the same time, Mr.
Very
Chairman.
Funny. Go ahead.
On the turkey license issue, and I guess I've got a question for Representative Hansen if he's talked to the Wild Turkey Federation about this change.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, I have not.
And Mr. Chair, I'm not quite sure that we should. I mean, this amendment came now, and I don't think that the Wild Turkey folks knew this was coming. The problem that we have with this, Representative Hansen, is that this area of statute was put in statute to help those landowners, those farmers that are living on the land. I understand what you're trying to do, and you're trying to help these folks that have bought some acreage in an area where there's great deer hunting or great turkey hunting, and they live up here in the cities, and they want to go down there and hunt deer or turkeys, and that's great. And I don't have a problem with that, but to give them a special preference I don't think is right. This was put in statute for a special preference for landowners, farmers that are farming the land, and they're there all the time, and it gave them kind of a boost up in getting some of these turkey permits, Mr. Chairman. So I would have to oppose this the section that deals with the turkey licenses, Mr. Chairman. I'm afraid I'm going to have to make a motion to take that out of the bill too, or out of the amendment, unless we can come to some compromise there. Because you know, maybe we should just eliminate this law altogether. Just get rid of that whole section of law and not give anybody any preference. You give folks that own land down there a preference, and then that's going to make it that much more difficult for the people we're trying to help. The farmers that are there on the ground farming and being able to go out and shoot a turkey.
Representative, so, nothing. All right. So we're going to lay this amendment over, see if you guys get pretty.
You're laying it all right.
I'm just going to lay it over for the moment, and if they can come to some agreement on it, we'll do it. Okay, to the bill. So that amendment, amendment 0171 is temporarily laid over, and we'll deal with that momentarily. So House File 1116 as amended to the bill, as amended at this point. Questions by the committee on the bill?
I'm sorry?
Questions to the bill as before us at the moment. House File 1116. Oh, I'm sorry. We've got a couple other amendments.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to be working with Representative Hansen, maybe we'll have the DNR explain the bill and then do your amendments when we bring back up the Hansen amendment as well.
Okay.
That's all right. So, Mr. Bogus, to the bill.
Mr. Chair and members, I do have some fact sheets to the bill as it was introduced. If I could get those handed out. I'll walk you quickly through the bill. Some of this has been changed, obviously, by some amendments, but Section one is defining terms that are used in current law and rule on immediately released or immediately returned to the water. They're not creating any new rule. We have rules right now that require that fish not immediately released or immediately returned to the water have to be counted towards the limit once you've reached your limit. This just defines what we mean by those terms. In other words, there's questions: can I weigh it? Can I measure it? Can I photograph it? This is just making it clear that those things are allowable. Section 2 and Section 3 have been modified by your amendment, Mr. Chairman, earlier. We're doing those definitions a little different way. We're defining pheasant and turkey to be ringneck pheasant and wild turkey to be game birds rather than defining them as they when the bill is introduced.
Mr. Bogus, if we could for just a second go back to number 1, the immediately released provisions.
Yes,
now, is there any reason that the people in the tournament fishing community would get upset over this language. Isn't this language, I think you said it was already in rule, and now you're making a definition of it in statute. So nothing changes regarding how they've operated, whether it's legal or illegal. This is just putting it in statute.
Mr. Chair, that's accurate. We are finding out that some of them maybe didn't understand current rule as well as we had thought they did. But we already have a law that says that, or I mean a rule, a DNR rule has been in effect for many years that says that fish that are taken by angling and not immediately released into the water after capture are considered to be in possession. Once a limit of fish has been reduced to possession, no culling or five-well sorting of that species is allowed. And that's been a rule for many years. And this just clarifies that immediately release does allow you to do some things before you release it.
Okay, so practically speaking, if a tournament fisherman is bass fishing or walleye fishing, whatever, and they have and they're short of the limit, they can cull until they catch the final fish of the limit, and then they're done fishing.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
And so if they have a live well, I want to get this on the record because I had a lot of calls on this. If they have a live well and the limit is six walleye and they have four walleyes in their possession and they catch a fifth walleye, they can take a walleye out of the box and put it back into the lake, and they can keep that one as the fourth one, et cetera. But when they catch this, if they have five and they catch the sixth, now they have no more opportunity to cull.
Mr. Chair, as soon as they put the sixth one into the well, they're done.
Okay, go ahead. I just wanted to make sure I got that right because we have quite a number of email on that.
Okay, yes, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Pyre is nodding yes as well.
Okay.
So we got that on the tape, too.
We got you.
The Section 4 of the bill allows for establishment of fees for use of wildlife management, aquatic management areas for things like dog trialing or minnow trapping. And this is something that we did for a number of years, and then as we looked through our authorities more carefully, discovered that we didn't have clear authority on that provision, so we've discontinued the practice until we can get our authority clarified. Section 5 clarifies some language on permits for taking animals causing damage, and it also gives the department authority to do rules for taking Canada geese nests and eggs with or without a permit consistent with federal regulation. These are migratory birds. The federal government last August changed their rules to be more liberal about how nests and eggs of Canada geese can be taken, because those are obviously geese that are reproducing here in the state. They're not the migratory birds that are having some more problems in Canada. So this would allow us to have the ability to either streamline our rules or to allow some taking of Canada geese without permits. Section 6 relates, there's also a couple of other sections in the bill that relate to this, relates to the requirement for the pictorial stamp as a licensing document for migratory waterfowl and pheasant. We eliminated that pictorial stamp as a licensing document for trout and salmon and for wild turkey a few years ago, but we kept it for waterfowl stamp and pheasant stamp. This would, this along with sections 19 and 20 of the bill would make just the endorsement on the license saying that you purchased those stamps all that you would need to hunt. We would still have the stamp contest. We would still print the stamps and provide them to people who wanted them, who would then pay an additional $2 fee, as we've been doing for the trout and salmon and for the turkey stamp.
So, Mr. Bogus,
yes.
Presently, when you buy a license and you buy a stamp, isn't the stamp on the license, but it has a terminal date on it?
Mr. Chairman, currently when you buy the license, for example, a common thing is for someone in March to go in and buy their sports license. It's hunting, fishing, they'll buy their stamps. We don't issue any of the pictorial stamps at the license agents. If you buy a duck stamp and a pheasant stamp, we'll mail you that stamp, the actual stamp, within 30 days. So the endorsement on the license is valid for all those stamps for 30 days after purchase. After that, for the duck and the pheasant stamp, you must actually have the pictorial stamp signed and in your possession to legally hunt pheasants and ducks.
But this document changes that so that just the endorsement on your license is adequate.
Mr.
And
Chair,
if you
yes.
want to get the stamp, you can pay $2 more and get them.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
One other suggestion that has come to me by numerous people, and we're not handling it in this bill, but people who buy their license in March and then they go buy a pheasant stamp or a duck stamp or other stamps, they end up with about half a dozen licenses in their pocket rather than one. And it would seem to me that with this computer technology, we ought to be able to go back and recapture the license and put all of everything they're buying on that license. But that's another day, another fight. Go ahead.
That's a good point, Mr. Chair. We are,
Mr. Chair, to that point, if you lose your license now, if you got, and I've had this happen, I haven't lost it, but I've had half a dozen different things, and you lose that and go to the DNR with your receipts, and I mean, they know what you've got, they'll print you out a new one that does have everything all together. So you're right, there's got to be a way to do that and make it easier.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chair, we are getting ready to enter into a new contract for electronic licensing, and that's certainly something we can look at. Section 7 is some technical fix-ups to people getting replacement deer licenses. We allow people to upgrade or change their deer licenses under certain conditions, and we identified a few problems with existing language this last season. The main thing here is allowing a youth who inadvertently buys an adult license to switch back to the youth license, which actually costs half as much and allows them to hunt in more areas, and makes it clear they can do that and that they'll get their money back for the difference in cost. And then there was also one other problem with people upgrading from an archery license to a multi-zone firearms license when the intent was from an archery to an all-season license. Some fairly technical changes there. Section 8 is another very technical change, but it's to provide for a different type of charge for a person who's taking a protected wild animal while their privileges to purchase a license have been revoked. Makes it a different type of violation than taking without a license. It's the same penalty. It just allows for charging a more specific charge for what the violation is.
Representative Guinness has a question.
I do. Here we come with another misdemeanor. Mr. Bogus, how many misdemeanor charges have you pursued in the last year and gotten convictions for?
Mr. Chair, Representative Guinness, I'll defer to Mr. Conrad.
Mr. Conrad, welcome again.
Thank you. Jim Conrad, representing Minnesota DNR Enforcement. Mr. Chair, Representative, in excess of 10,000.
Wow. Representative Virginia.
Okay. You have, so how does this process work? If you have, there have been in excess of 10,000 tickets written, how do you do this?
Yes, citation, Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, citations written.
And what happens then?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the process is that the individual has the ability to either pay the fine, the designated fine, appear in court and offer an explanation, or fight the charge in court in his manner, whether it's an appearance before a judge or before a jury, depending on the violation.
Mm-hmm. And how many of those have gone beyond the, gone to court?
Mr. Chair, Representative, very few of them go to court.
Okay. All right. That is the thing that I worry about the most, the court expense of going to court rather than... have you all ever considered using a civil penalty system throughout all of this, doing the same thing, issuing a fine? Or has that been discussed as an alternative method?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we have explored that in certain situations and currently do have that ability in certain situations. However, we have found that in many of those, the teeth of the fine, in other words, if the individual fails to pay the civil penalty,
mm-hmm.
We do not have a way to bring that person, say, to justice and get that fine paid.
Thank you.
How many, you said not very many, about how many end up going to court? I mean, I have never got a game violation, but I got a few traffic tickets, and I noticed down there that says, you know, you can appear, and what's the success rate? How many people go and appear on these game violations, and what's the success rate?
Mr. Chair, my current recollection is that it's in the 90 percentile range that we have convictions as well as people paying their fines. Personally, I can tell you in 23 years of enforcement on Lake Minnetonka, which is a very high violation location, I went to court a total of about six times.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cornish, that sound right to you?
About 98%
of victory
vote,
right?
It varies a little bit.
Representative
Morrow. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I just want to follow up, Mr. I heard Representative Gaines' question correctly. The question I heard was how many misdemeanors, as opposed to, maybe it's the technical term, as opposed to petty misdemeanors or other. 10,000 misdemeanors last year?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes. Pretty much all of our violations are misdemeanors. There are very few gross misdemeanors and a very few petty misdemeanors, but just about all of them are classified as misdemeanors.
I've heard Representative Hackbarth talk about concerns about misdemeanors on other bills, so that's why I want to make sure that I'm clear that that number is misdemeanors. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes.
Okay, Mr. Bogus, go ahead.
Okay, proceeding to Section 9, this is the first of three sections in the bill that deal with a new apprentice hunter proposal. Some other states have been trying apprentice hunter programs which allow a person to try hunting one time without having met all the firearm safety requirements as long as they're closely accompanied by an adult who is licensed to hunt small game. The Ohio and Michigan are two other states that have tried this, and it basically allows a person to, if they're unable to get into a course or if they're at an age right now, it's anyone born January 1st, 1980 or later has to have these certificates. And so it's 27-year-olds this year, and that gradually gets older each year. Mm-hmm. This would allow people the opportunity to try it once without having to go through the full course, but then after that they would have to meet the entire course. Mm-hmm. Section 10 makes it clear that for the spouse of a resident who's on active military duty, they can obtain a resident license even if they do not have a State of Minnesota driver's license number ID. Currently, we don't provide resident licenses to anyone except those that have one of those forms of ID. The person who's actually in active military duty doesn't need the license. They just have to show their leave papers. But this would make it clear the spouse can hunt on a resident license, hunt or fish on a resident license. Section 11 is a very technical change. The all-season deer license last year was changed from two tags to three tags, and we missed on line 5.9 in the fee section. We missed changing two to three. Section 12 allows for non-resident youth to be able to hunt and to be able to hunt for small game or deer. Non-resident youth under the age of 18 to hunt small game or deer for the same fee as a youth resident could. This does have some fiscal implications, but we feel that it will encourage more hunting by youth and that those youth will undoubtedly be accompanied by adults as they come to Minnesota to hunt. Section 13, actually, 13 and 14 are deleting some obsolete language. Section 13 is deleting obsolete language related to use of commercial cold storage. Existing statutes say that you can't use commercial cold storage for anything except lawfully taken fish and furs. It's common for deer and other species to be stored in commercial cold storage, and we don't have a reason why that's a problem, so we're just proposing to strike that prohibition. On section 14, this is an old law that prohibits flesh of beaver, raccoon, rabbits, and hare from being transported out of the state. We think it goes back to some of the old market hunting days when jackrabbits and other species were rounded up and shipped east and sold on the market. Again, it's an outdated statute. Section 15, again, and 16, again, deal with the apprentice hunter certificate provisions. Section 16 includes some language on accompanied. We do feel that people that are taking advantage of this exemption from the firearm safety certificate should be more closely supervised than those that that have been through the training. And again, this would be a one-time, once-in-a-lifetime provision. Section 17.
I want everybody on the committee to understand that language right there. We had a real robust discussion about this for people who were who had the certificate last year in Representative Hagbar's committee. What this would essentially mean is that if you were deer hunting, that essentially you'd virtually have to have them in your stand. Or if you were pheasant hunting in a cornfield, you'd have to have them walking next to you in the row next to you. Because it says uninterrupted visual contact and unaided verbal communications. I'm not so sure that can always be accomplished, but I'm willing to let, you know, I mean, it's in there, that's what you want. I don't see it, that anybody's going to take it out. I'm just worried about it being able to be accomplished, and who's going to judge if that actually happened. I mean, you know, it's going to be interesting.
Mr. Chair, we did have with Representative McNamara, a big discussion about this last year when we were proposing some similar language for other youth or youth that have been through firearm safety. This is for a more limited group of people. Section 17, again, is a very technical change. We had we had prescribed the 4 o'clock closure. Actually, it was in statute for a number of years, and then we agreed to continue it through rule. It used to extend through the Friday of the teachers' convention weekend. That was shortened up to the first 8 days or so of the season by statute, and we've been continuing it since then through the second Saturday of the season. And that also coincides with the date for the spinning wing decoy provision, which goes through that Saturday. But we noticed, one of our sharp-eyed staff noticed this last year, that we could only prescribe that before the Saturday nearest October 8th, not through that Saturday. So this would allow us to go through that Saturday of this nearest October 8th. This last season, the 4 o'clock closure went through Friday night, and the spinning wing went through, or the motorized decoy provision went through Saturday. Section 18, I had mentioned earlier that last year the all-season deer license was amended to include 3 tags instead of 2, and we had thought that the language and statute was sufficient to do what we needed to do to allow taking of deer with that third tag. But when we put the regulations actually together last summer, we realized that there was still some glitch in that language. It didn't allow a person, for example, to take 3 antlerless deer with firearms during the firearm season, and it kind of counterproductive to what we were trying to do with managing the deer population. So this would just delete all of the very specific prescriptive language and statute relating to taking antlerless deer, and just allow antlerless deer to be taken under this license as prescribed by the commissioner, so that we could have some flexibility as conditions change to allow or not allow the taking of antlerless deer with that license. Section 19 and 20, these sections again relate back to the eliminating the requirement of the pictorial stamp for a licensing document for taking waterfowl and pheasants. Section 21 provides an additional option for identifying trap tags. Right now, a person can use their driver's license number or Minnesota ID number or their name and mailing address. This would also allow them to use what we call their Minnesota DNR number. It's a number assigned on the electronic licensing system that once an individual gets one of those licenses, that number does not change. this would also extend the time that a person could use their previously issued driver's license number. Now that they're all being changed over to new numbers, we would recognize their old numbers through March 1st of 2013. Section 22 would give the commissioner authority, actually would require the commissioner to charge a fee for fishing contest permits. Current law says those permits shall be issued without a fee. Our Citizens Budget Oversight Committee for Fisheries Operations has recommended that we recover the costs. Currently, those costs are estimated to be about $108,000, and there is a corresponding provision in the governor's proposed budget to, assuming that we can get this language, to appropriate that money. And it allows for the setting of those fees through a publication in the State Register, and we are working with the contest organizers in exactly how we would structure those. And I've got some information on what the it's about 600 contests right now, I believe, for that $108,000, and we could provide more information if you have more questions. Section 23 is providing authority to prescribe restrictions on taking fish to protect water quality or improve habitat for fish or wildlife. Current law only allows restrictions on taking fish to protect fish populations. The biggest example that we have of where this authority could be used, and where actually we've done some restrictions on fishing in the past before we, again, carefully looked at our authority. But Lake Christina is a major waterfowl lake in western Minnesota. We've done two rote-known treatments of that lake and installed a number of fish barriers to try to improve that lake for waterfowl. And it's several hundred thousand dollars each time we have to rehabilitate that lake, and we'd like to close it to fishing to prevent inadvertent introduction of fish or minnows, and also to prevent sort of the expectation that that's going to become a fishing lake. Another example is with some of the bow fishing interests. There's interest in chumming with corn or other material in the water to attract fish, and chumming and other aspects of angling is becoming more common. This would give us authority if that became so prevalent that it was starting to affect water quality or other issues, that we could put some limits on that. Section 24 is making it clear that a person who does not remove a structure left on the ice as prescribed by statute is subject to a civil penalty under 115A99, which is the littering statutes. And then Minnesota Statutes 97A475, Subdivision 38, 97C365 were repealed. The 97A475, Subdivision 8 is the fish buyer's license. That's a license that, as we phased out commercial fishing, the need for that license, this was a license for a person to buy fish from a commercial fishing licensee, and there's no longer a requirement in law for that license, but the actual license and the fees are still there, so this is just repealing that obsolete statute. And then 97C365 prohibits having a spear in a dark house while fishing. And in 2006, there was a change in statute 97C371 to allow angling in a dark house as long as the fish is immediately released or placed on the ice. So, Mr. Chair, members, that summarizes what's in the bill.
Okay, questions on the bill as presented before us as amended? Representative Simpson.
Yes, just to clarify that spearing again for me. It's still, we're still doing it, right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Simpson, yes, last year the law was changed to allow spearing in a dark house, but there's still a 97C365 says you cannot have a spear in a dark house while angling, so this just cleans that up.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions on the bill before us? If there are none, we'll go back to the amendments. The First Amendment is the Hansen Amendment that we temporarily laid aside, the 0171 Amendment. Representative Hansen, two-year amendment.
I'm not sure on the procedure here if I would amend this to take out subdivision 4. And I believe Mr. Helland has language to go in on 2.12.
Okay, so the first part of the amendment is to eliminate subdivision 4, which runs from 1.4 down through and including 1.14. And then, Mr. Helland, language
here. Members, on line 2, on page 2, line 12, we say violation of this section shall result in a civil fine of $100.
Discussion on the amendment to the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen and I have worked it out, and we have agreed that this is what we should do to this amendment, and you might want to just incorporate that in his amendment.
And Representative Hagberg, we actually sent the photographer up there so they'd take some pictures of you two working this one out so we'd have proof. They took about 100 pictures of you two up there, so it ought to be good for a brochure.
Sounds good.
All right. All right. To the amendment, we'll just incorporate those changes into the amendment and then vote on the amendment. Is that acceptable?
Yep.
All right. And the question is called on the 0171 amendment. In favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Hackbarth has, as I recall, two amendments to the bill. And the first one is, Representative Hackbarth, you want to go ahead with your First Amendment? Pick which one you want to do first.
Mr. Chairman, we'll do the 0259 amendment. 0259.
Okay, Representative Hagberg moves the 0259 amendment. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I've got some folks from the Dark House Association here if they'd like to come forward and to speak to the amendment. And I've got an amendment to the amendment, and Mr. Helland, do you mind if you'd read that or explain what the amendment is?
Mr. Chair, on the amendment, Representative Hagberg wants to ensure that spearing is a part of the license fee to take fish by angling. So his amendment would read clause 1 there, to take fish by angling or by spearing from a dark house, $17. And then he would strike 1.8 there.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Helland. Mr. Chairman, here's the issue. Folks are out fishing. And whether you're fishing by angling or if you're fishing by spearing, you buy a license. And right now, the folks that do spearing in a dark house, they have to buy an angling license if they want to angle. They can angle out of the same house. And they have to buy another $17 license if they want to spear in that dark house. And then they also buy a license for their dark house or their fish house or ice house. So, Mr. Chairman, this would just simply say, if you're fishing, you're fishing, whether if you're angling or if you're spearing through a dark house. And, Mr. Chairman, I have...
You want to just incorporate that into your amendment, and we won't have to...
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, yes, if I'd incorporate the amendment into my amendment.
Your testifier?
Hi, I'm Roger Geschel. I'm with the Minnesota Dark House Association and a number of other sportsman group around, and I appreciate the opportunity that you let me speak here. The there are approximately 16,000 people in the state of Minnesota that enjoy dark house spearing. The license is the same, the limit is the same. You take three northerns whether you're fishing or whether you're spearing. The extra fee that we pay is less. It brings in less than $300,000 to the fisheries. I'm all for fisheries. I've been on the fishing roundtable every year for 16 years since it was started, so I know a little bit about what they're doing over there. One of the things that I think probably Ron and the department are probably opposed a little bit is losing the $272,000. I can understand that. But I think it could be made up if we look at the 1.6 million fishermen in excess of that. if we charge 25 cents extra, that takes care of the difference in the money. I had proposed earlier that with the fishing that we have in Minnesota, it's the best in the nation, and I've hunted and fished all over America and outside of America, that there's no place better than here. And what we're charging, the $17 to fish, actually just to fish, is probably the best bargain in outdoors in America today. If we charge an extra $5 onto a fishing license, that would generate in excess of $10 million. And we could do a lot with that. The dark house guys take less than 1% of the northern pike taken in the state of Minnesota. I think it's unfair that we're taking so few fish, and with the season getting shorter every year with global warming, that we can barely get out until Christmas time now. So, for your consideration, I appreciate the time here. If you have any questions, I'd certainly like to answer.
Any questions? How about from the department? Let's hear from the department on that.
Oh,
Representative Kelleher would like to come forward too. Or Mr. Kelleher. You're starting to be like a representative anymore, today at least. Maybe that's lower pay.
Members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. The amendment before you with the dark house license, it's similar to a small game license right now. If you want to trap, you need to have a small game license and then buy a trapping license, so we understand. It's not a unique situation in our licensing system right now. The issue, as Mr. Axel spoke of, is the revenue disparity of the loss of the $272,000 at a time when we're having a lot of intense discussions with our stakeholders about the disparities in some people's minds between the Game and Fish Fund and the amount of money spent on fisheries versus wildlife. This reduction would just exasperate that situation at hand. We're trying to get a handle on it. There's other issues out there. I know the Senate's talking about removing the requirements for a shelter license on portable shelters. They're making that up by charging more to the non-resident licenses. If this was made fiscally neutral, it would be a different story. But right now, when we're trying to deal with some issues in the Game of Fish Fund, decreased by $272,000 just is not the direction we need to go at this time.
Mr. Kelleher.
Good afternoon again, Mr. Chairman. Tom Kelleher with the Minnesota Journalists Association. As you all would normally be aware, I normally do not have opinions about fishing issues. However, most of you have heard my spiel in regards to the revenues and expenditures of the Game and Fish Fund, specifically fisheries and wildlife, where there has been about a $25 million shortfall in revenues for fisheries. This would certainly exacerbate that. I certainly understand the logic of what Representative Hackbar is talking about, fishing's fishing. At least in this isolated instance, I would hope that the committee would add the 25 cents to line 1.6 to make this particular provision whole, and not to exacerbate the situation that Mr. Myers and I have been talking about in the hallways the last couple of weeks, and I've mentioned in committee in regards to those under revenues for over expenditures on the fisheries side, and how we would like to have that addressed. And I'm not naive enough to think this session, but hopefully within this biennium, that some of that can get addressed, of those shortfalls in expenditures versus revenues.
Representative Agmar, you have a question or a comment on all this?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I think everybody on this committee knows that that I've supported license fee increases on game and fish. I was the chief author of the bill that increased the license fees on boats. I've done a number of issues with increasing fees and creating new fees and new dedicated accounts, etc. And I'm not opposed to doing that sort of thing. But Mr. Chairman and members of this committee, this is a fairness issue. There's just no reason why these folks need to buy two fishing licenses. And that's all this is about, is buying two fishing licenses. Now, I understand that it cuts into the Game and Fish Fund. And I understand the issue there. And if I thought that helping this amendment pass, I'd make an amendment to increase the fishing license to $18 to cover this. But I don't think that's going to help this bill pass or this amendment pass. So, But, Mr. Chairman, I think it's a fairness issue. I would hope that people would look at this that way. And I just don't know why we're collecting two license fees from these folks for fishing. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Assistant Commissioner Meyer, can you tell me how much would we need to increase the fishing license so that fisheries wasn't taken from wildlife? How many million a biennium? At 1.6 fishermen, but I don't think they all buy a license. So what are we talking about, $3-4 increase here so that they were paying their fair share?
Mr. Chair, members, roughly about $3-4 is about the correct price. I can come back to the committee with an exact estimate for the exact number it would take. It's a philosophical issue as well, Mr. Chair. You know, past legislatures have dealt with this Game and Fish Fund as a Game and Fish Fund. It's not spending wildlife dollars on wildlife dollars or fisheries dollars on fisheries dollars. We need to have those discussions with the stakeholders. Should we just spend our deer license dollars on deer, the pheasant dollars we get off the pheasant stamp on that, and split out the small game? I mean, where do we go with this? And we need to have those discussions as a community within the sporting community first, and then come back with the legislature. But it's an overall discussion that needs to take place. In past years, it's been the Game and Fish Fund has been a Game and Fish Fund. It's much like the Environmental Fund over the Pollution Control Agency. But we need to have those discussions with the Budget Oversight Committee, with the deer hunters, and everyone else, and the legislature as well, to figure out how to solve it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, in our discussions that we've been having with the DNR, Mr. Myers is absolutely correct that in the past years there's been a commingling of funds in the Game and Fish Fund between fisheries and wildlife. It's just that exacerbation is getting to be quite large. In the upcoming biennium, if the legislature adopts the governor's budget as proposed, it's an $8.5 million difference between expenditures and revenues on the fisheries side. That is just an last biennium, it was $9-point-something million. So it's not going away as an issue. I don't think the Deer Hunters Association is asking that every nickel of deer licenses be spent exactly on specific deer issues. However, we would like that number a lot closer than it is today.
All right. Any further discussion on the amendment? Anyone in the audience who testify for or against? Okay. The question is on the 0259 amendment. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman,
next amendment.
And that amendment number is, if I can find it.
0215, huh?
Yes, Mr. Chair, it's 0215 amendment.
Clay County.
Yep.
Yep, all right.
I'd move that amendment, Mr. Chairman. This is an amendment that was brought to me by Representative Lanning. This is an issue that came to us through the conference committee last year when we were doing the Game and Fish bill, and turned some shotgun hunting for deer into a rifle area. And I might have to have Mr. Boggess come up and explain this to me, because I'm just offering this for Representative Lanning. And I have to tell you, I kind of agree with Representative Lanning, but I'm not quite sure what this does. And Mr. Chair, if it's okay to address the question to Mr. Boggess. Mr. Boggess, does this reverse the entire legislation, or does it only cover the area that Representative Lanning is concerned about?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hackmarth, looking at the language in the amendment, it's a little hard to explain. I'll maybe try to show the committee on a map here, but last year, the area in the Red River Valley here along the North Dakota border was added to the rifle zone. It used to be the shotgun zone. It isn't shown on this map. It's actually shown on a little map here on the back of this map. It's hard for you to see. But the rifle zone right now comes across kind of Highway 95 and goes up and then went right up to the Manitoba border, and all the Red River Valley was in the shotgun zone. Last year's amendment moved all that into the rifle zone, which corresponds to what's on the other side in North Dakota and so forth. But Representative Lanning This is Moorhead right here. If you look at just this little square here, which is, this is the Clay County line, and this is Moorhead right here where Representative Lanning is from. And there was a lot of concern right in that area. So what this would do would be to move this little chunk back into the shotgun zone.
Thank you for that explanation, Mr. Bogus. And this is an issue that Representative Lanning has, and Representative Marquardt also has concerns about this, and they'd like to see this turned back. And from what I understand, Mr. Chairman, Representative Senator Langseth is going to be offering this to the Game and Fish Bill in the Senate also.
Both of the members, both Representative Lanning and Representative Marquardt, came to me and said that they were supporting this amendment for the edification of the committee.
And, Mr. Chairman, it's more of a safety-type issue because of the growing area around Moorhead.
Okay. Questions on the amendment?
Might be a good idea if this area could have the open gun case rule.
We could add crossbows. Any further discussion on the 0215 amendment? Favor the amendment? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. All right. So now we have reached our limit of amendments. It looks as if... And we have the bill, House File 1116, which I will renew my motion to House File 1116 as amended, recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources as Representative Eakin's committee. In favor of that discussion? In favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion does prevail. Last bill. Members, in the bill that you just passed is House File 1021, which I want to send along as a set on its own track as well. I will need to adopt it so that it matches the language of the Senate and matches the language that's in the Game and Fish Bill, the amendment, the DE2 amendment, which is in your packet. And that is the amendment that the Senate put on the bill, and it is reflected, by the way, in the Game and Fish Bill that we just passed. So by adopting this amendment, we will have identical language to the languages in the Game and Fish Bill. Is that correct? Okay. So my motion would be recommended to pass. First, I'd like to move the bill, House File 1021. Recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources, which is Representative Eakin. Discussion on the motion. So both the bill that we just passed and this are going two separate tracks. Okay, there being none, all in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion does prevail. Unless there's other business before the committee, I will... sorry about that. We adopted the amendment, the DE1. Now we need to vote on the bill. So for voting to move the bill to Representative Eakin's committee, recommended to pass. For Representative Eakin's committee, recommended to pass. All in favor, House File 1021 as amended. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That is it for today. Thank you very much. We got done in, 2.5 hours. Thank you.